Well, while these are going around, I wanted to start with a story, and I think it's a story that some of you have heard before. The story of the blind men and the elephant. Apparently in India, rural India somewhere, there were some blind men who had never experienced an elephant. They brought an elephant in, and these people reached around, they patted the elephant. One was by the tusks and said, "Oh, I get it, an elephant's one big long spear." And then another grabbed a leg of the elephant, wrapped around it, and said, no, they're pillars. An elephant is a pillar. Somebody else is around the backside and is grabbing the tail, probably not a smart thing, but grabbing the tail, and says, "The elephant's a rope. What's wrong with you people?" And the other blind man is grabbing the side, and he says, "Wow, the elephant's like a wall. You're all wrong." And you can probably tell where we're going with this. This is a very popular parable these days because the idea is that religions all are kind of interchangeable. They really don't have the truth. Nobody should be arguing for their position as being right, that it's everybody's right. That's called relativism, right? No such thing as truth with a capital T. We have little pictures, little bits of truth, but we don't have the whole truth. And so therefore, the message is, who can tell when it comes to religions, right? Who can tell? Who can test a religion? They're all kind of the same after all, aren't they? Well, did you notice that's the only part of life that we talk like that, as if there's no truth? It's just up to you. Pick a religion that you like, kind of a smorgasbord thing. Go in there and pick a little of Hinduism, a little bit of Buddhism, and if you like, a little bit of Catholicism, whatever. Put it all together, and there's your religion. But you notice we don't spend the rest of our lives doing that. We don't go into a doctor's office and get a prescription, go to the pharmacist and hand him the prescription, and he says, he throws the prescription away. He says, "Any pill is about as good as any other pill. Here, try this. See, do you like the color of this? It's red. It looks good with your outfit." You're not going to do that when it comes to pharmacists, right? You don't do it when it comes to bus schedules. You don't do it when you pick cars. You don't do it when you fix your home up. You say, no, there are better things than other things, right? I'm going to use this kind of tile rather than this sort of tile because I know it holds up better, whatever it is. But when it comes to religions, all of a sudden people get real fuzzy in this area and say, "Oh, who could tell?" So my answer is, all of us can tell. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, four different ways. And there are more than four, by the way. I'm just doing four just to keep it down to a reasonable level. There are a lot of ways that we can actually judge. We can actually test religions. Not a very popular idea today, but it's true. There are ways to do that. So we're going to talk about four of them today. So here's the first one. How about we look at facts? Not feelings, not warm fuzzies or anything like that. Let's look at facts. And so I broke facts into several areas for you here. What about manuscript evidence? What am I talking about there? Well, what pieces of writings do we have that tell about the religion? And I bet a lot of you know this. Christianity does extremely well when it comes to manuscript evidence. Do some of you have an idea of what I'm talking about here? Do you have some things that you can toss in at this point? What am I talking about when I say manuscript evidence?
Dead Sea Scrolls.
Dead Sea Scrolls, right? Yeah, I mean, they didn't know for a long, long time whether the Old Testament was reliable or not. The oldest manuscripts we had for the Old Testament were like the year 1000 A.D. Well, you think of Isaiah and Daniel and all back in the 600-700s B.C., so you're talking 1600, 1700, 1800 years there. And people said, "Gee, I don't know. I sure hope they've copied it carefully over those years." And as Omar said, now they've come across the Dead Sea Scrolls, and what did they find? 1,000 years earlier than the earliest manuscripts, now we're back to like 100 A.D., right around there, they find these manuscripts, and guess what? Well, you know the answer. They were copied correctly all the way through, so we don't doubt the manuscript evidence. So Christianity is great when it comes to manuscript evidence. We have thousands of manuscripts that go back very close to the time of Jesus. In fact, here's something kind of interesting that's just starting to come out now. They apparently, when some people got buried back in the old Egyptian days, the rich ones got the fancy windings and burial cloths and things like that. The poorer people, they actually took strips of like papery sorts of material, papyrus and all, and put it as a mask over them. Well, they found a way now to take these masks and pull them apart because they're actually different pieces of paper, just odds and ends of paper, and they found a piece of the Book of Mark going back to the first century, right? Just a few years after the time of Jesus. Bingo, right? Everybody's eyes open up. So Christianity does way better than any other religion when it comes to documenting who said what when, right? We got thousands of manuscripts and they go back very close to the time of Jesus. Christianity wins out over any of these other religions as far as manuscript evidence. Well, let's go to a different field though. What about archaeology? How's Christianity doing? Well, let's take Mormonism as an example. I hate to pick on something very easy to pick on, but the Mormons say they have history, don't they? They say they have a background. Do you know the story of Mormonism? It's supposedly this big civilization in Central and South America somewhere that existed with millions of people. I mean, it's just enormous. And how much evidence have they found of that? About this much. Zero evidence for this. Right? So you say, well, wait a minute. So, you know, if you look at those two religions, Christianity and Mormonism as an example, there's a huge difference. How's Christianity done as far as archaeology? Luke has been found to be just an excellent historian, amazingly accurate on the way boats sailed, on ports, on the names of different people in these different cities. They each one had a different title to them. And Luke has all of that down pat. So archaeology is very strong as far as Christianity goes. The other problem Mormons have gotten into lately deals with DNA and American Indians. Anybody know the story of that? Okay, the Mormons say American Indians are Jews. They have there's a, you know, that the Jews came over to the Americas and that's where the Indians got started. Well, they've done DNA tests and I bet you're not surprised to find out that American Indians come from Asia. They came across that land bridge at one time, Alaska. Bering Straits, yeah, through Alaska, and came down, saying, I don't want to stay in Alaska. They came down. So what's going on there? Well, here we go again. Archaeology seems to be saying Christianity makes far more sense than some of these other religions. What about other sciences, though, right? Is this it? No, we can test, as far as the facts go, let's take astronomy. Hinduism says this universe has been here forever. It's an eternal recycle kind of thing, going on and on and on and on and on. Is that what science is saying now? No. You know what science sounds like? Genesis. In the beginning, right, God created. There was a starting point. And all science now says, yep, there was a starting point. The universe hasn't been here forever. Right? So now if you match up Hinduism with Christianity and Judaism, you say, well, the Hindus got it wrong. And this is in their sacred scriptures. So it's not just somebody, you know, off the top of their head, but this is what they fully believe. How about Islam? Well, Islam says life starts with a clot of blood. No. And so they didn't get their biology right either.
We're not gonna go there.
The sun, according to Islam, sun sets in a muddy pool. No. We found that astronomy, it doesn't quite do that. American Psychiatric Association has weighed in as far as psychiatry goes, and they made a statement at one time about Scientology. They went after Scientology. They said it's wrong. It's completely bogus. And so even other sciences tend to have certain religions that don't do very well, and other religions that come to the top. And I think Christianity comes to the top when you're talking sciences themselves. Let's stay in the area of facts. So let's go to a second area. What about the history of these religions? We know the history of these religions. So how does Christianity get started? Well, Jesus dies, is resurrected. There's a whole, we could do a whole talk about the resurrection and the evidence for the resurrection. But let's just assume that there is the resurrection. How does Christianity spread? Through violence? No, absolutely not. It was the Christians that went into Rome and took care of the sick and took care of the orphans and took care of the kids that were not being taken care of. They elevated women to a new height. They did all these wonderful things and being persecuted as all this went on, right? It was not a violent kind of start to this at all. Well, let's make a comparison. How does Islam get going? The sword, right? It conquered. There's no doubt. There's no argument there at all. They got what they got through conquest. How about Jehovah's Witness program? I thought this was interesting. I did some work on this at one time. Do you know before 1935, they voted, they participated in war, they observed holidays, it was okay to smoke, they said Jesus did die on a cross. Those things are all gone now. They've reversed things. Now, I forgot where they are on blood transfusions. I think at one time they're okay, and then bad, and then I think they're okay again. But do you see the problem with that? If you just look at the history of this religion, all the changes that have been made makes you wonder, right, what's coming next? Would you really want something that doesn't have a firm foundation that keeps changing the rules as they go? I don't think so.
Did something happen in 1935?
I don't know. I think it was just a meeting, and they just sort of decreed.
I was born. Something did happen.
So you were the cause. How about Mormonism? At one time, they said this is the most perfect book ever written. It's been changed thousands of times. Thousands, not a few here and there, but it's been changed. That's historical. It's true. You can find this sort of stuff out. In fact, I think it's really fascinating, going back one more time to the Jehovah's Witnesses, I have a book at home that contains actual photocopies of their information. And so they can't say, well, you're just making this up. Oh, no. Their own journals, their own information, talks about all sorts of things, right? Jesus was going to come back. They had a date for that. And then they said, well, we didn't really mean that. It was more like a spiritual return. Okay. But there are all these changes that are out there, right? So we're just talking the history of the religions themselves. Christianity, I think, does very well. Let's go one more area as far as still under the facts, right? Talking facts. What about the founders of these religions? Well, let me read something to you. This is H.G. Wells. Pretty well-known philosopher, and he was a writer and a great thinker right around 1900. Absolutely not a Christian. Here's what he had to say, thinking about the founder of Christianity. I'm not a believer, but I must confess as a historian that this penniless preacher from Nazareth is irrevocably the very center of history. Jesus Christ is easily the most dominant figure in all history. How about Albert Einstein? Believer? No. He says, I'm a Jew, but I'm enthralled by the luminous figure of the Nazarene. No myth is filled with such life. And you can go on and you can go on and you can go on and look at people who don't have a dog in the fight, right? And they're not Christians. And they say over and over again, there are all these other people that have ever lived, and then there's Jesus. Well, how is he unique? Can you give me some ideas here? And then I'm going to go to some of the other founders of other religious beliefs. What makes him unique? Why do people want to put him up in a different category?
He didn't seek power.
What's that?
He didn't seek power.
Yeah, it's a very different way to start something, isn't it? L. Ron Hubbard, we'll talk about him in a minute, the starter of Scientology, he was all about the money. Jesus wasn't. What else is unique about him?
Well, he was raised from the dead.
Yes, the resurrection is the center point, isn't it? And again, we can talk about that another time, but there's plenty of evidence that would suggest this event really did happen. No other founder can claim anything like that.
Sinless. He didn't have any sin.
Right. Muhammad admits that he was a sinful person. It's over and over again stated. Every other religious starter has sin. Jesus didn't. How else is he unique? Yeah, the things he did. Unbelievable things that he accomplished. The things he said. I mean, anybody walking around making those kinds of claims today would be locked up, right? Because he's making some outrageous claims about himself. I and the Father are one. Wow. The things that people said about him, both friends and enemies. Even the enemies. During his time and later, had to admit that he was accomplishing some things that nobody else was able to accomplish. Jewish Talmud writings about Jesus hundreds of years later said he was working miracles. They just attributed it to Satan, but they said he was working miracles.
He modeled everything he taught.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the life was just unbelievable, wasn't it? How about the prophecies associated with Jesus? There's no other religious leader that has these kinds of prophecies with that kind of pinpoint accuracy. I'm sure you've studied that one time or another. Where he's going to be born, the tribe he's going to be born, the time period that he'd be born in, the kind of life he would leave, the kind of death he would face, on and on and on. These prophecies are amazing. You don't find that for any other leader. Tom?
Yeah. Virtually all the other religions you see wax and wane, where our faith has just continued in a stable operation.
Yeah, exactly.
Waxing and waning.
Yeah, 2,000 years of it, huh? Well, and the impact on the world, as some of these people have said, the impact that Jesus had is greater than any other religious leader. Maybe one more thing we could talk about is, how is he unique? He's unique because of the relationship that he has to his religion compared to anybody else. Could you take Muhammad out of Islam right now? Yeah, you just have to do a bunch of things. What does it matter whether he's part of it or not? Could you take Buddha out of Buddhism? Yeah, you just have to do a bunch of things, right? You just have to have that eightfold path. You got to think a certain way. Can you take Jesus out of Christianity? He is Christianity, right? I mean, there's that old cliche, and I'm sure you've heard it. It's a relationship, not a religion. You don't have relationships with Buddha. You don't have relationships with Muhammad. You can take Joseph Smith out of Mormonism, right? But you can't take Jesus out of Christianity. It's completely different, totally unique compared to any other religion. Well, let's run through a little bit about the founders of some of these other beliefs. How about Muhammad? How'd he do as far as a moral individual? Not so well, huh? Lacked mercy. Was offended easily. Very warlike. Did ambushes. Married this underage gal. A liar. I mean, on and on and on. He thought he was having visits from the devil at the beginning. Which we would probably say he was more accurate there than he thought. But, I mean, he admits it, right? He was not a perfect person. How about Joseph Smith? Anybody know the background of Joseph Smith? He was involved in the occult. He has these seer stones, and he's doing all sorts of occult divinations and all. How about Mary Baker Eddy? She started Christian Science. Anybody know anything about her? She said her husband was mentally poisoned, which I don't understand. She claimed her book was unique, but they found all sorts of places that she plagiarized it. She claimed she had a severe injury and she was able to heal herself. That later was proved to be absolutely false. L. Ron Hubbard, he's too easy a target, I guess, but he's one that started Scientology. He was a science fiction writer. In fact, he said one time, you know, if you really want to make money in this world, start a religion. So he did. He was married to two women at the same time, involved in the occult. He was a liar, a reclusive kind of oddball. You don't want to model your life on an L. Ron Hubbard. How about the two people that started Jehovah's Witnesses? Charles Taze Russell was the first man. He was big on pyramid power. Do you know what I'm talking about there? People back, this is crazy, but the late 1800s, early 1900s, they thought the pyramid had some kind of answers to everything. It was sort of a cult, you know, when the Egyptians put it together. Somehow they had sort of insight into the divine world. And so people used to measure the pyramid, and they would get it in, let's say, inches. And then they would divide that by the height, and whatever it was, they would come up with weird numbers. All of a sudden, you could get 1776 out of it. They'd go, they predicted the American Revolution. Really? And so, obviously, nobody believes that anymore. But Charles Taze Russell did, and he published books on it. He was really into pyramidology. Okay. He sold something called Miracle Wheat. He would have been on late night television these days if he was still around, peddling stuff. He was on the witness stand one time, and he claimed that he knew different languages, ancient languages. So they brought in some ancient languages for him, and he failed miserably and finally had to admit, under oath, no, I don't really speak and understand foreign languages, especially these ancient languages. Oops. Following him was a man named Judge Rutherford. He was a liquor smuggler during Prohibition. Had failed prophecies, lived a rich, rich life. I think he had a place down here in San Diego, actually, and well off, and let everybody have problems, right, while he lived the high life. So you can run through the founders, and I'm not trying to just put slurs out there against people, but I mean, you just match them up against the life of Jesus. They're all the same. No, they're not. A world of difference there. So those are some of the ways, I'm still under number one, right? Just the factual ways that you can compare, you can test, you can judge different religions. But what about number two? Think about the logic behind what some of these religions believe. So let's talk about that for just a minute. Let me give you a couple of examples and you'll catch on here. Some people are what called deists, which say that God, there is a God, that he wound up the universe, got it going, and then he walked away. Yeah. So there are no miracles today. Don't expect, Jesus didn't really commit the things that they said he did in the Bible. Jefferson was a deist. He went through his Bible, his New Testament, and he cut out all the parts where Jesus does miracles and got rid of them, and then he has a nice Bible. That was the Jefferson Bible. So guess what? It ends with Jesus dead. Okay, so that's the deist view. Well, what's the problem with that? Well, wait a minute. If God is not communicating with us, how is it that these people know who this God is? Right? That makes no sense. See, God doesn't communicate with us. Let me tell you about him. What? How is that possible? How about naturalists? People who say there is nothing beyond this world. I would call that a religion because that's their claim to knowing what ultimate reality is, right? They say the natural world is all we have. There's no supernatural. Okay. Here's the problem, though. In other words, they're just saying we're meat all the way down, right? We don't have a spirit. We don't have any connection to God at all. If that's true, our mind then is a result of a mindless evolution, right? If there is no God. So you trust your mind, which is a random, chaotic coming together. You trust your mind to understand the universe. Does that make sense? Something that comes about randomly, and you think it's going to give you all the answers to everything. How is that possible? Let me share a few more of these with you, get you thinking about it. What about Eastern religions? A lot of the Eastern religions believe in karma. Anybody have a thought about that? That just doesn't make logical sense. Karma is the idea you get paid back, right? You do good things in this world, you get to come back, but you come back better than you were, and the idea is you eventually evolve to the point where you don't need to come back anymore. You got everything all straightened out. Anybody see a problem with that? I mean, there's more than one.
Yeah, one of them. If you're really bad and you died, then who you turned into would be even worse.
Yes.
So you continue on until the ultimate worst person was alive.
That makes sense. I mean, that's a problem with that, right?
Well, who determines?
See, that's the thing that really gets me. Who's... There is no God, right? It's just we're all one and the universe is one. And so who's in charge of the karma machine? Right? Who says, Omar, next time you're coming back as a salamander or something? I mean, what? I don't know.
Is that why they feed the rats? You know, they don't want to kill the rats and they feed the rats.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the ethics involved with some of these religions in just a second, but...
Yeah.
Here's another thing. If we're paying off our karma, how come we can't remember our past life? Now, what's the point? If I've done some terrible things in the past and I don't remember them, I'm just going to do them again. Here's another big thing. If you believe in karma, how come the world's not getting better? I mean, the idea we're all kind of progressing and we're learning from our mistakes and we're becoming better than we were in the past and we have a better future to look forward to. I look around, I don't think people are getting better. We have more technology, that's true, but are we really getting better? I don't think so. How about Buddhism? Still thinking of Eastern religions here. Buddhism says the goal of life is to get rid of your desires. Anybody see a problem with that? So
that's a desire.
That's a desire. Oh gosh, I got to get rid of all desires. That's my desire. Uh-oh. Right? I mean, these things are self-contradictory, aren't they? I mean, if you hear enough of them. How about the New Age movement, right? They say we're all divine. Thank you, Shirley MacLaine. But if we're all divine, where's evil coming from? Does that make any sense? I don't think so.
Who says what's evil?
Yeah, exactly. How could you call anything evil anyway? Shirley MacLaine believes, and so do the New Agers, that we create our own reality. Well, why? If we all create our own reality, why are we all sharing this reality? What's that? Yeah, but exactly. Why are we sitting all here sharing the same reality? I thought we're all dreaming our own worlds. Okay. And they don't believe there's a God. They think there's an impersonal force. In fact, this is kind of the George Lucas Star Wars thing. I don't know if you remember that movie. May the Force be with you. May God be with you. May the Force be with you. So if there's a force out there, how does a force create personal beings, right? How does impersonal reality create personal beings? So these are things you just scratch your head. They don't make a lot of sense. Out of Palomar, a big thing now, I wouldn't call it a religion, but it's the same self-contradictory thing. It's called postmodernism. I don't know if you've heard about that. The idea, again, that there's no truth. When you sit down and read Moby Dick, you're not supposed to read it to figure out what Herman Melville thought and whether his ideas make sense or not. No. You sit down and you bring to Moby Dick your thoughts, your attitude. So Moby Dick means to you what it means to you. It means to somebody else something completely different. It means to somebody else something else very different. Now, if you're writing a book on postmodernism, do you see a problem with that?
It means different things to different people.
Yeah, they think that they're going to get the same message to everybody, right? But they're telling you, yeah, I'm sending you the same message, that there's no such thing as a overall message. I was always tempted, you know, when if I ever see these books on postmodernism, I get tempted to write to the author and say, I'm really glad that I read your book, and I'm really glad to know that you're a believer in Jesus Christ. Because I know they'd write back and say, that wasn't the point of my book. And I'd say, well, that's what I got out of it. I'm not going to do that, but I mean, honestly, that, right? I mean, they're making a claim that this is the truth for everybody, but what is their claim? That there is no truth for everybody. I mean, do you hear the contradictions in that?
Even those bumper stickers that coexist.
Yeah.
You know, have you seen that? That we're all going to coexist, and I just...
Does that make your teeth kind of grind a little
yes,
bit?
Right.
I brought that up in apologetics class one time, and several people were absolutely amazed that I was upset by that. I wasn't upset, but I just didn't know what she's talking about, the coexist, where they take different religious symbols that look like the word coexist. Yeah, you know, to me the message behind that is you religious people are causing all the problems. If you just quit fighting, everything would be okay. Well, if you look at the history of the 20th century, it wasn't the religious that brought about these wars. It was the irreligious. It was the communists. Mao took care of a lot of people in China. He didn't have any religion. Pol Pot took care of a lot of people. Hitler took care of a lot of people, right? It was not a religious issue, but yeah, I'm with you on that coexist thing. That's always cracked me up. Now, what about Christian Science? What did they say? Well, illness and sickness are illusions. So why do they have practitioners going around healing people? I don't get that. What happened to Mary Baker Eddy? She's dead.
Yeah.
If the founder can't work out her own system, why would we want to be part of that? Mormonism, what do they say? This is what really bothers me about Mormonism. You try to argue with them and they say finally, their final position is to back away from logic, and they say, you know, it comes down to the burning of the bosom. Mm-hmm. But that's subjective. Really, that's your bedrock belief. When everything else is shattered and you can't find any evidence in South America of this big civilization, where do you come down on? It's in my heart. But we know how evil and twisted our hearts are, right? And they're going to base their religion on something as changeable and not trustworthy, right? To depend on the human heart. How about ethics? Let's go to the third area here. I need to move along here. Ethics and human nature. So how are we doing as far as ethics? Christianity has some of the highest ethics ever. We talked about that just briefly a few minutes ago. It was the early Christians that saved the little kids. It was the early Christians that took care of the injured, took care of all of the deadbeats of society. It was Christianity. Christianity established the hospitals. Christianity established the orphanages. Christianity was out there making a difference in the world, involved in missionary work. We were talking about that a few weeks ago. It's how do the Eastern religions do when it comes to things like that? So they see somebody lying in the street, let's say, who's suffering. They walk around them. Why? We're back to karma again. Why would you walk around somebody who's suffering? Yeah, you're interrupting their karma if you go up to them and you try to help them. They've got to work that out on their own, so you walk around them. Whereas you had Mother Teresa go and take those people and nurture them, get them back to health. That's not an accident. That's a huge difference, I think, when you look at the two different religions. Christianity is the only one that's not based on works. Boy, there's a burden put on people, just ethical. It's extremely hard on people to tell them to get your act together yourself. You're on your own, whether it's Hinduism or any other form. How about this? Christianity says morality comes from God. Where do a lot of these other places get their morality? It's just whatever the people think in the group. Yeah, but I don't want to trust us to establish our own morality. Right? That doesn't work out very well. Isn't it Christianity that says we are kind of a mix of good and bad? Right? Other religions may not say that. Let's go to the fourth point here. So we've got facts, we've got logic, I think we've got ethics on our side compared to some other religions. What about, can you live it? Is it good for your soul every day as you walk out the door? Can you live it? Well, I bet your answer is yes. You're here, right? It's working. What does it do? Well, let's start basically. What does it do? It gets rid of guilt. I one of my favorite people as far as apologetics goes is Greg Kochel. Stand to Reason, str.org, in case you ever want to go and see what he's got there. A lot of good information. He said when he speaks to people about the topic of God, he says, you know, there's one thing I know about everybody in this room here, and people get kind of quiet. What? He says, I know you all have a low self-image. He said, because you're not living up to even your own standards. Forget the Ten Commandments. You're not living up to your own standards. You know how often you fail. And he said, so we all have this feeling of guilt. And he said, Christianity takes care of that. These other beliefs don't take care of the guilt. They just say, work on it. Keep working on it. Christianity says it was paid for you. It's taken care of. I think also Christianity gives us a sense of awe. You know what I mean by that? I've taught science fiction before, and sometimes people who are interested in science fiction say, oh, science fiction can give you a sense of awe of the universe. Well, I think Christianity does that real well, too. Do you? Well, what's awe-inspiring about Christianity to some of you?
The majesty. Yeah. My brother and I were sitting in the middle of, well, not in the middle, up in Alaska, looking at the mountains that God created.
Yeah.
And they're awe-inspiring.
Oh.
Everything is.
It is, isn't it? I mean, the way the universe functions is just amazing.
I think the most awesome thing is to realize that no matter how good or bad we have been, are, or will be, that one day we're going to look and be like Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. That's a guarantee that nobody else has got. It does not matter.
Yeah.
If you've made your choice, it's guaranteed.
Right.
The majesty of who God is.
Sure. Do you remember the last few chapters of Job where God shows up after Job's been, and his friends have been kind of knocking around the idea of God, and God says, hey, Job, I got some questions for you. And he goes into all these questions. Yeah, the majesty of God comes out there pretty clearly, doesn't it? What about on the small scale? I was just thinking, while we're all sitting here, our body is fighting off infections. Our cells are replicating. The blueprint has been laid out. And you don't have to do anything about it. It's all being taken care of. That's pretty awesome. Here's something just recently that knocked me over thinking about our universe. About 50 years ago, they started this thing called SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. You probably heard about that. They had these big radio dishes, and they were aiming them at different parts of the sky. And the idea was, 50 years ago, that this universe, it was so easy for life to get started. You don't need a god. You just need some chemicals, shake them up, and turn them loose in a fairly warm environment, and you get life. Well, 50 years have gone by, and they've really readjusted their idea of how hard it is to get life started. And there's a man who's University of Arizona, Paul Davies. He's not a Christian. He just put out a book a couple years ago, and I was flipping through a Smithsonian magazine, and they had a quote from him. He says, I'm just paraphrasing, but he says, you know, after all this searching, he said, I think we're the only life in the universe. Carl Sagan would flip over in his grave because Sagan was the old school, right? He thought life just started any old place. How about that for a sense of awe? We may be it. God may have done all of this for us. The entire universe, the billions of galaxies, the hundreds of billions of stars and planets and everything for us. And how perfect life is set up right here on Earth. You know, we have the right planet and the right atmosphere and all these things perfectly set up.
Distance from the sun.
Exactly. You got to be in the right spot. They call it the Goldilocks zone.
Yeah.
All right, not too hot, not too cold. We're just right.
You want a terribly boring situation. Think of the poor people that are monitoring these things.
Yeah, another 8 hours, absolute silence, okay. if you saw the movie Contact, that's the Carl Sagan hopeful view, right? That's the one with Jodie Foster where they do get a signal, but it's not happening in the real world. Well, still thinking about subjectively satisfying, you can't live out these other religious beliefs. You really cannot live them out. I read a real heartbreaking story, thinking of Christian Science, a heartbreaking story of a woman who was a staunch Christian Scientist until she was on her deathbed, and then she was just full of fear, really full of fear, because something was coming next and she had no control over it. And there are stories and stories and stories about people like that. You can live out Christianity. You can't live out some of these other beliefs. I bet a lot of you have had answers to prayer in here. Isn't that part of living the life, the Christian life? Some of you have probably seen miracles, real miracles in your lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You were very different people at one time, and you've changed because of your Christian beliefs. I mean, these kinds of experiences are so powerful as far as Christianity goes. So let me end with this. This is a so there are the four ways we can look at and test religions: facts. We can look at the logic behind them. We can look at ethics as far as how you live out a life and in the personal realm of it. So I think this is a good one to end on. It's Psalm 119, verse 160. Here's what it says: "All your words are true. All your righteous laws are eternal." I think that sums it up pretty well. It's truth. We have truth on our side. Yes, there is truth with a capital T. Christianity has that. These others are poor imitations and haven't matched up very well.